So we've had the news this morning that the government's launching a review of high-speed rail link HS2 with a go or no-go decision by the end of the year. And that's the Transport Secretary announcing that. And when asked about the money already spent on the project, Mr Grant Shapps said, just because you've spent a lot of money on something doesn't mean you should plough more and more money into it, regardless of the facts. And he said ministers were asking the reviewers to just give them the facts. But do we already know enough? Because HS2 is undeniably expensive. You've got 80 to 100 billion, I think was the latest estimate, to build a lot of untested tech on a small, densely populated island. And few railway experts actually think that it can be delivered on time and on budget. It bypasses smaller towns, for example, that are, in my opinion, in desperate need of better transport links. And management mishaps have been a massive feature of the HS2 project. But is it necessary? Because supporters of it argue that when HS2 is finished, 35,000 seats will be available every hour out of the capital. Triple the current level, and the project will free up existing lines for more services to other towns. I'm Darren Grimes, and joining me to discuss this is the IEA's Head of Transport and my favourite Yorkshireman, Richard Wellens. Thank you very much for joining me today, Richard.
Thank you, Darren.
Now, Richard, you've been making the case against HS2 for years. And you've argued that leaks that have happened, that come out in the past, have made absolutely clear that the project is at risk of becoming one of the worst government disasters in history. And now, is it too late, basically, to scrap the project, given the billions that have already been spent and the jobs that have been created from it?
Well, not at all. I mean, as the Transport Secretary said, just because you've spent a few billion on HS2 doesn't mean to say that spending another, say, 80, 90 or 100 billion wouldn't be a complete waste of money. And of course, there's the opportunity cost issue. Is that the best way to spend that additional 80 or 90 billion? Almost certainly not. There are far better schemes that would deliver far better value for money.
I was reading about the Concorde fallacy, and you know, the fact that the evidence had suggested before Concorde even had its first commercial flight that it would just be massively expensive and wasteful, and politicians' egos decided to push ahead with it and go ahead with the project anyway, and obviously it ended up collapsing under it. What just wasn't commercially viable.
Yeah.
Do you see a similar future with HS2?
Exactly. It's a classic example of one of these big government project disasters. So we've seen not just Concorde, also the Millennium Dome, the nuclear power program that really costs taxpayers and bill payers tens of billions of pounds, massive waste of resources. We see this happening time and time again. And one of the reasons, of course, with these vanity projects is that the ministers that initially give the project the go-ahead, they're long gone when the problems start to emerge, probably 10, 15 years later.
Mm-hmm. And then they also, supporters of the project, argue that when construction hits its stride, 30,000 people will be employed, and that's up and down the country. Do you not think it's worth it for that?
Well, that's another fallacy, because, of course, if the money was spent on other things, that would also employ people. So actually, because it's such a capital-intensive project, it's actually a pretty inefficient way to create jobs. There are far better ways of employing people than on something that's basically a waste of money.
Mm-hmm. And you've done a lot of work on HS2 over many years. I want to know, for our listeners, when did you start this work and why are you so passionate about it, and how much, what have you actually produced over the years?
Yeah, so our first major report was in 2011, and we identified several flaws in the business case for HS2, which was subsequently vindicated. And one of those, of course, was the idea that business travellers couldn't work on the train, which of course was complete nonsense in the era of broadband, internet and laptops and so on. And many people subsequently, of course, pointed out that often people get more work done on the train than they do in the office, where they're constantly being disturbed by other staff members. So eventually the Department for Transport came round to this idea and did factor this in. But it just showed, you know, this sort of cavalier attitude to spending this amount of taxpayers' money without even getting these basics right.
And what else have you done?
Then in 2013, we looked at why HS2 was actually happening. We looked at the political economy of the project and how special interests were driving it forward. So you had this lobbying campaign that was being bankrolled, particularly by the high-speed train manufacturers themselves. So the contract for the trains is likely to be around 7 or 8 billion. So there are huge profits to be made. And of course, the Northern Councils as well, they were sort of a bit later in the game, but they obviously they see HS2 as a way of getting their own vanity projects funded from central government. So things like tram schemes to link to the HS2 stations and also the regeneration around those stations.
Because that is, again, supporters of HS2 do argue that it has support from these councils and therefore, you know, it's popular with local people. But that's not true, is it?
It's not. It's very much a sort of top-down project. So if you look at the opinion polls, then HS2's deeply unpopular with the public, with low levels of support. And that's true across the whole country. And if anything, it's more unpopular in the north of England than it is in London, which speaks volumes, really.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what do you say to the argument, then, that we need HS2 to boost capacity?
Well, it's been shown through various studies that there are far cheaper ways to increase capacity. Firstly, I mean, if you wanted to increase capacity on the rail network, then the worst overcrowding isn't actually on the route out of Euston. That's one of the least overcrowded routes out of London. So it doesn't make sense from a purely logical point of view. But if you are concerned particularly about the West Coast Main Line, then there are much cheaper ways of increasing capacity on it. And the studies that have investigated that have shown that an alternative project would have roughly three times better value for money than HS2. So things like longer trains, more sophisticated signalling, remodelling the junctions and so on. And if necessary, obviously, the obvious thing for a free market perspective is to start having more flexible pricing and cut some of the subsidies that are bankrolling the rail network.
And then so you've sort of touched on it there, but what should we be focusing on instead? Because, I mean, in your work, in your reports, do you actually focus on future trends, which could be things like driverless cars, for example, hitting the market? And actually, should we instead be focusing on road capacity and not getting so hung up on this train line? I mean, where do you sit on that?
Well, I mean, I don't think we should be trying to pick winners, looking 10, 20, 30 years in
advance.
And you
don't like an industrial strategy.
No. And I mean, that's the problem with HS2. We're dealing with so many unknown unknowns. So we don't know what the impact of driverless cars is going to be. Already, lots of business travellers have shifted to video conferencing for routine meetings. So, for example, legal tribunals, that kind of thing can now be done through video conferencing. And really, the time savings for business travellers, that's absolutely crucial to HS2's business case. So if that's eliminated, then it really is in deep trouble and you're not going to get the fare revenues either to try and defray the cost that taxpayers are facing.
Mm-hmm. And then you've wrote about the evidence from other countries that suggests that high-speed rail schemes can drain economic activity from the regions to the capital city. And surely a lot of arguments in favour of HS2 say that connecting the rest of these places to London should be the priority to boost the economic well-being, I guess, of people that live in those areas. But actually, shouldn't we be focusing instead on connecting areas in the north instead of trying to drive people to London?
Well, yeah, I mean, there is evidence in other countries that high-speed rail has tended to concentrate economic activity in the capital. And we also have other examples, for example, Doncaster, which is only 90 minutes by rail along the East Coast Main Line from London. And it's had a fast rail link for decades now. And yet it's still one of the poorest urban areas in the whole of the UK. Mm-hmm. So simply having good transport links often isn't enough to regenerate areas. You often end up just wasting the money. As you said, if you do want to have these wider economic benefits, then smaller scale local transport's are far better because it's all about deepening the labour markets. So let's be honest, it's still going to be, for your average person, you know, they're not going to want to commute to London from Manchester on HS2 when the door-to-door travel time is going to be at least 2 hours in reality. So if you can deepen labour markets by improving local transport, then that makes a lot more sense.
Absolutely. And those billions, you say, must be redirected to investments with higher returns. Such as building bypasses around bottlenecks on the road network. And you say HS2 will absorb a large chunk of transport investment for over many years.
Yeah.
And misallocating resources on a vast scale, because it's all being poured into this HS2 bottomless pit.
I mean, obviously, in an ideal world, we wouldn't even be discussing this, because the private investors would be determining which roads and
isn't that telling in itself that there isn't much private investment in HS2?
Well, exactly. It does speak to the relatively poor value for money compared to, say, Heathrow expansion, which will be largely privately funded. But nonetheless, if we're putting our sort of Soviet central planner's hat on, then obviously it makes sense to, given scarce resources, to give government funding to those transport schemes that are good value for money and to reject those that are poor value for money. What we actually saw a few years ago was that George Osborne was shelving or cancelling high value road schemes, but going ahead with HS2 phase one, which is very poor value for money. So just the economic logic wasn't there, and even a Soviet planner would have understood that.
So it's entirely political then, isn't it? They just don't want to... The person that pulls the plug and ends up being the one who their opponents could argue have wasted billions of pounds on a project that was already started and not saw it through, when actually we would argue that HS2 is an expensive, rich... To me, what I find really objectionable about it is that it's basically going to be a rich man's toy that many people will just not be able to afford to use. And I find that pretty objectionable, especially when the idea is boosting capacity. If there's a market demand for that, fine. But the lack of private investment suggests that there won't be much of a demand for it.
Well, I mean, you know, there can be wider benefits that can't be factored into a commercial decision. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it is indicative. But as you say, this is the problem with rail subsidies more generally. So the typical rail passenger has a much higher income than average. I mean, obviously, the London stockbroker belt is the core market, for example, but there's also churn into city routes as well. And also, you know, when you talk about business travellers, an important point is that a lot of these people going up and down to Manchester and Liverpool and so on are going to be public sector bureaucrats, people working for the BBC, HMRC or whatever. And you know, given, unfortunately, the structure of the economies up there. So I'm not sure that these time savings really mean that much for business travellers that aren't really business travellers.
Well, exactly. I don't know how any politician actually can argue that they're focusing entirely on the Northern powerhouse while spending so much money on this rail that would seems to just benefit London. I don't understand the rationale behind that, but I'm getting on my social justice warrior soapbox a little bit here.
Well, what I would say is that the congestion problems on the transport network are far more extreme in London and the South East. So the worst congestion problems on the railway generally are in London, the South East. Okay, there are certain train services in the North West that have problems because they're just using those two car sets, which is probably daft. But nonetheless, in terms of the sheer number of passengers experiencing overcrowding, the main problem is in London. And it's obviously true on the road network as well.
So then what would you, if, let's say, let's to end, say that the Transport Secretary gets you in. He says, Richard, come on, I want you to sort this out. And he says, explain to me in a minute why I should scrap HS2 and also what I should be doing instead. What would you say to him?
Well, I mean, the Achilles heel of HS2 is opportunity cost. So this certainly isn't the best way for the government to be spending 80 billion plus on transport infrastructure. So if you wanted to increase capacity, you would invest elsewhere. If you wanted to deliver time savings, well, you could deliver much greater time savings from other investments. And if you wanted to regenerate the north, then you could focus on much smaller scale local schemes that could be delivered much more quickly.
Beautifully put, Richard. Let's hope he gets you on the phone.
Hopefully.
Thank you very much. For more podcasts, films and reports, you can go to the IEA website at iea.org.uk. All of Richard's work on HS2 will be on there. And you can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.